Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Televi, and joining me this evening to tackle your questions are Alex Dace from Umthombo Wealth and Kayaletu Nodada from Old Mutual Investments. So if you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Kayaletu, nice to see you there this evening. I know that Alex is having a few problems with his audio, so it's just the two of us for now. Not a brilliant day for the market, if you consider what happened to the currency markets. But at least we finished in the green. And to some extent, that was all thanks to NASPAS, I imagine. What was behind that jump, which kind of was, I suppose, in contrast to a lot of other moves to the downside that we saw?
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
So what we saw today, I mean, we're taking context of what we saw on Friday. I mean, the market was down markedly on Friday following and pretty much digesting what the Fed and other central banks had done with interest rates. The hike, mostly expected, but the key negative surprise, I guess, was that the commentary of the Fed post going into the end of the year was that they might hike more than what the market is expecting. So they were more hawkish than expected. And you saw that across quite a lot of the central banks around the world, with the exception of UK, which where you saw the UK come in with the stimulus, effectively stimulus package, proposed tax changes. And we saw that playing out in the pound. But basically, it was quite a bad day, a negative day for risk-off assets, so rather risk-on assets. On Friday and today, we saw a little bit of a bounce with some of the tech stocks, even in the US for that matter, bouncing from the lows from Friday.
I mean, to some extent, the Chinese government sort of wants to come in and support its stock market. Alex, I think you can probably hear us. I hope we can hear you now. Is that a savvy move? Is that kind of a, you know, it puts a floor underneath any stock with exposure to China? I mean, there's an ETF on the South African market, the China MSCI ETF. Are you quite sort of convinced by that?
Good evening. Have you got all yummy?
Yes, we can.
So I think investors need to, start to get used to the fact that over the last 14 years, we've got so much monetary and fiscal stimulus that we're not really used to what, when there's a real sell-off in the markets or economic downturn, that you have to take the full pain. So if what we're seeing in the moment, of course, and specifically in the United States, is seeing quantitative tightening, and at the same time, interest rates going up. So that means there's no more fiscal support or quantitative easing, trying to buy back shares or bonds whenever they're under pressure to try to support the market. So that means the theoretical downside is a lot more than we've experienced over the last 14 years. Now, you always will get some governance or central banks that will perhaps be against the current status quo. For example, China might be giving further stimulus and so forth. But the fact of the matter is the Chinese economy is slowing down. You know, I mean, I think they expect that GDP growth is reaching about 3%. What is coming here, even next year, is going to be disappointing as well. They've got a huge amount of debt issues, specifically on the personal side of things, and a massive property potential crisis there. So I don't think stimulus can really move the structural issues they've got, you know, over the medium term. So I think investors will have to brace for some pain, unfortunately. And, you know, high interest rates, high inflation, high unemployment, low asset class prices.
Yeah, it's a toxic cocktail, you know, equities have been sort of, I suppose, just clattered in this all-it-takes fight to combat inflation, which has been kind of unleashed by the Fed, and now it's this sort of race from every central bank to follow suit. Just on the pound, you know, we breached 18 to the to the dollar today, as far as the rand is concerned, which felt horrible. I mean, we went to 18.07, but we weren't as badly off as the pound. And a viewer has actually sent through a question, and he says, As a true capitalist, I support the UK government decision to cut tax rates in order to support growth. There's obviously short-term pain or panic, like the plummeting pound, but I see longer-term gains. What do the guests think? And he says, as a Capco investor, I hope this is true. Khayeletu, firstly, do you think the UK is in for a really rough ride? I mean, it's one, you know, cut taxes and then have to borrow to do it. That sounds like the worst form of, if you were a household budget, you know, you would need your head read, right? But this is what they're doing. So the suggestion is that they've lost all credibility with the market. Is there going to be a savage ride out here for the pound, for starters?
The UK, I mean, the UK hasn't seen these levels of inflation for a very, very long time. And as a consumer, there's already been a lot of pain that's been felt there, just on the ground. And some of the stories you hear anecdotally about just how expensive sort of electricity bills have gone up, how difficult it is to get hotels and move around, et cetera, et cetera. It's already been quite a tough environment, and the stimulus, as you'd expect, I guess, from a government to try and support the consumer. The stimulus would be welcome if I was a consumer in the UK, but on the market side of things, I think it's an opportunity. If you're looking for quality assets, if you're a dollar investor, that is, and given the pound move, I think some assets would have will look a lot more attractive at the prices that they are now. Albeit it may just be a short-term pain, long-term you could make some good returns from the UK market.
Alex, do you concur? Or do you think the UK, I mean, yeah, I'll leave it there. Do you concur or do you differ?
It's an interesting one because in our team, we don't have consensus yet. So most of my team members are on that on that page. However, I'm a bit different. So if you think about the UK at the moment, they're in stagflation, right? So that really means high inflation, low growth. Now, you need to raise interest rates in a stagflationary environment to try to obviously try to bring inflation down. But the problem is there's no focus on growth there. And I think, you know, growth is also a way to get out of stagflation. That could be done through reducing deregulation, for example, or increasing investment reducing taxes. And that's exactly what they're trying to do this. So by reducing taxes, they're hoping that they will stimulate more demand, more investment, and hopefully try to grow themselves out of this problem. So I can see the reason for that. Obviously, execution is going to be a key risk. And if they get to give them time to do it, we know the UK politics at the moment is very volatile, and I'm not too sure if the Conservatives will actually have the chance to see through this tragedy. But I think sometimes you need to think a bit more differently to try to get out of situations. You can't just raise interest rates and hope for the best. You know, you have to try to grow the economies.
But the problem is that everyone's being forced into this interest rate hiking cycle as a result of the Fed. I mean, we're seeing it here. If we don't hike interest rates, our rand is going to weaken further. Therefore, we'll have more imported inflation. So the Reserve Bank finds itself in this impossible bind, even though there's no demand in our economy. So, I mean, do we kill the economy just to save the currency? Khayeletu, I mean, do you see this, you know, this kind of spiral continuing where everyone has to just keep pace with the Fed in terms of monetary tightening, regardless of what is actually unique to their own economies?
So what we can't escape is that our local market is influenced by the global markets, and by and large, the U.S. market is a very important market for how we proceed going forward. On the one hand, we have, I mean, benefited from the stimulus that the other expert was mentioning, the stimulus over the past 14 years, and all of that we've seen, our market has also benefited in that. And as we try to curb inflation now, I do see, although it could surprise on the negative side in terms of how hawkish it is going forward, I do see reason for us to also try to curb inflation and keep it within the target band that we as a central bank, we as South Africa as our central bank targets. We target our range. We're outside of that range. And you can see our central bank hiking in order to curb inflation. And the global market does influence that. So it's not, I don't think it's outright following, but to an extent, we do need to curb inflation
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just go back to the viewer's question on, and he's a capital and counties investor. And sorry, Kayela, just sticking with you, Alex, before I get to you, because I know you also tend to look at a few UK stocks. Would you be buying more Capco shares at this point? I mean, you suggested that this is actually an opportunity to maybe take advantage of the panic. Is that something that you would buy, or are property shares in the UK now at a sort of precarious juncture, given what's going to happen to interest rates there?
I mean, looking at the impact overall, and Capco is quite specific, the impact of the higher interest rates overall globally, there's quite a lot of opportunity that has cropped up in terms of what the share prices have done, even here in the SA market. And I would start here on my side. And there's quite a lot of more attractive, some of the counters have been cheap, but they're starting to be cheaper. And that's where, in terms of our philosophy, we're looking and we're saying the stocks are getting cheaper. They're high quality stocks. We think they're long-term winners. And there's quite a lot of short-term pain that we're going to see and that we are seeing in the numbers. And it's just a matter of trying to work through and prioritizing, as it were, where the highest or the most offer you can make for your clients at this level. So I am getting quite excited about where the market is. Mm. I was looking at the numbers on Friday and saying this is long-term lows, two-year low prices, five-year, 10-year lows in terms of where the prices are. And I'm thinking there's quite a lot of value that is in the SA market as well. I would look even broader as well. That's the okay. point.
Alex, just going back to you to finish off the segment. I mean, if we look at capital and counties or UK property stocks or any UK shares, is it a good opportunity to get in there or to buy more or to sell out, which doesn't seem to be where either of you are at? The latter.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I'm not an active manager in the UK, but I can imagine there must be lots of opportunity for active managers in the UK at the moment. So if you do want to invest in the UK, I'd probably look for active manager instead of buying ETFs, because I'm sure that specifically in the mid and small cap UK space, some of the stocks must have been sold off to ridiculous valuations. So I think, yeah, that's an opportunity. Now, the problem with Capco, I used to be quite constructive on the business, but they have lost quite a lot of the optionalities. You know, a few years ago, I had to sell Allscourt, and so don't really have anything that's going to really grow the business. Covent Garden is already a relatively mature asset at high valuation. Of course, doing now the merger with Shaftesbury, which is going to expand that offering and so forth. But I don't see any much optionality for that business to really grow to be earning strongly over time and then earning a good yield. Mm. So there's probably better opportunities in the UK market. But if you're in South Africa and you're looking for UK opportunities, one of those is, of course, Capco. And, you know, you can probably do worse than Capco, but it's not something that's at the moment that is exciting me. There's certainly a lot of other opportunities locally, and I also manage offshore that's probably better than Capco.
There was one share that had a fabulous day, and that was Tiger Brands. Kayeleto, starting with you again, the share was up, what, 8-9% on a pretty... I sort of felt like the trading update could be characterized as not as bad as feared. Although actually, not to take anything away from Tigers, but there seemed to be some genuine improvements in the business. What did you make of the share price reaction?
We'll say the earnings numbers came out earlier and they were better than what the market expected. I mean, 35-45% HEPS growth expected, albeit with... If you think of what happened last year, there was civil unrest. There was a product recall last year in their canned vegetables. So there are some of those impacts that are in the base. But the second half momentum in the second half, the positive surprise was that they were able to pass on quite substantial double-digit inflation to curb some of the cost pressures that we've seen across all the producers, actually. And that is actually positive momentum going into the second half of trading, which is, and the year end is 30 September, which is a few days out.
Yeah.
So the numbers were better than expected. Second half was especially pleasing. There are some one-offs, But yeah, it was a better than expected number and quite a good performance from Tiger Brands this morning.
I didn't actually realize that it closed over 10% higher, so 10.4% up today. I know people like John Bickard will be very happy because they have quite a lot of Tiger Brands in their fund, the most unwanted and unloved share in the JSE. Alex, the other thing that was quite interesting was how, you know, they said all load shedding has not been as disruptive to the business as you might expect. You know, they've kind of invested in alternative sources of supply, although they did caution that the generators that they have to run cost them four times as much as Eskom electricity. So, I mean, so it's clearly not ideal to have to bear that cost because, I mean, that's also something that you're going to be struggling to pass on down the line. What other takeaways did you make from that trading update?
Well, we're kicking ourselves a little bit at the moment because we looked at Tiger Brands very closely on late and decided not to buy it, but perhaps should have bought it. But this is obviously a step in the right direction for Tigers, but a lot still needs to be done at a business. Hmm. You know, I don't think, you know, a lot of strategic direction changes needs to happen there, you know, look to sell some of the lower quality assets and focus on the quality ones. We do have a lot of number one brands, which has got a lot of potential and so forth. So perhaps they need to become smaller in order to become more nimble and focus on and value return for shareholders. And also then perhaps shift the narrative back to growth.
Which assets do you think they should sell in your view?
Well, certainly, I mean, the thing about the HPC business, home personal care, I mean, that's something that doesn't really make sense, something they wanted to sell in the past. We know Lipstar doing something similar in that business. You know, and then some of the brands that are perhaps are not leading brands in their portfolio. So you just want to make the business more simple, reduce complexity, reduce unnecessary costs, and perhaps also reinvest back into the mid-management team in the business. So for the Tigers, have lost a lot of skills over the last 10, 15 years, and it's unsure if they've really been able to replace those with adequate skills. So that's, you know, that's what you need to do. So clean up the business, make it more simple, reinvest back into getting quality people on board, make the business more asset light with some growth potential, and I'm sure the rating will follow over time. But it's a lot of work to be done, but it's good to see Tigers at least giving some sort of positive update. But there are some one-offs in those numbers, and so we'll have to wait for the detailed results to get a true sense of what the true operating underlying performance was and what the path is from here going forward.
Yeah. Just sticking with the food groups, Kailetu, there's been quite a lot of trading updates, bit of corporate action rumored to be about. I mean, and you have a plethora of options actually on the JSE. So you've got Tiger Brands, you've got AVI, you've got Libstar, you've got Brait, actually, you know, which is going to spin off Premier. So there's quite a range to choose from. Do you have a certain view of the food sector on the JSE? Oh, and RCL Foods. And RCL is also spin off the chicken business and the sugar business. I mean, there's quite a lot of potential action taking place there. So if you had to survey the sector, do you have any particular favorites or any particular shares that you would just not go near?
So look at the food space. AVI stands out. Highly defensive business, very strong brands, ability to pass on price, protect margins, hold on to some of the volume, and they produce very high returns and they continue to reinvest in the business. Whatever's left from there, they then maintain their very, very high dividend yield. And they continue to pay specials every probably 2 to 3 years on average. They pay special dividends. So it's a highly defensive business and pays a good dividend, very good capital allocators. So when you look at AVI, that's the one that stands out for me in the food space. And we like that for our clients and we like that for our portfolios, especially going into this part of the cycle, as it were.
Okay, yeah, you want a safe pair of hands. Alex, do you have a similar view or are there any others that take your fancy?
Yeah, so I think if AVI can give you earnings growth of 5 to 6% over the next 3 to 5 years, share price will probably be closer to 100 rand. So I think that's the optionality in AVI. Not shoot the lights out, but I think it will give you decent returns if they can produce from this current earnings base. RCL, which has been a massive underperformer for as long as I can remember, There is, of course, some corporate action happening there, and I think we want to look out for. Also within the Remgro stable, so it could be that Remgro eventually decides to deal as RCL or merge it with some of their existing food business, and then RCL doing some additional deals, whatever the case might be. But once again, they first need to start to clean up their portfolio. I mean, we know the vector business, the logistics is underperforming. The chicken, as you mentioned, too. Unfortunately, they're going to keep the sugar, but I think overall the portfolio, there is work required, and if they can do that, perhaps this underperformer could change the momentum. The others I'm not too fond of, Lipstar, RFG, I think they've got some issues, and I would rather prefer to be an ABI. And I can see a reason for something to be optimistic about Tigers, but there are some issues, as I alluded to earlier.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of Remgro, there was the news today that it's going to unbundle its shares in Grindrod Limited. Kayaletso, do you think that's a savvy move? I mean, actually, Remgro has been super busy in the last 12 months. They've been doing a lot of things to clean up their portfolio. I think maybe all the criticism that they received from investors for doing nothing for so long has really stung, and it seems as if it's lit a fire underneath Yanni Durant.
Yeah, I saw the news earlier today, and I mean, you look at all these holding companies and how unpopular holding company discounts have become. Remgro is trading at near the highest discount to the underlying NAV of the businesses they hold. And they've been very busy, as you say. There was the Mediclinic, there's Total Energies that was, I suppose that's a rumor at this stage, because neither companies have confirmed that. And today's Grindrod announcement actually was a bit of a surprise for me, because as you say, they've been quite busy. But this is the journey to unlock some of that discount in NAV, so unlock some of that value. And I suppose we'll wait for further details as to the rationale and the reasoning beyond that from the Remgro side. But that was, I suppose, a positive surprise from my side that they continue to try to close that gap.
Yeah. Alex, as for Grindrod Limited, do you like it? Do you look at it? I have to confess, I own shares in it, but it could have been a retirement trade for me, but I only bought 10,000 Rand worth of stock because the share is up about 100% year to day. So it's done extremely well, but sadly, I'm not as rich as I would have liked to be. Would you still buy the share? What do you think its prospects are?
Yes, I think that they're still on the path to continue to create value. I mean, it's been a tremendous value has been created over the last 18, 24 months, and it's still not finished yet. So obviously, Grindrod Bank, that deal is imminent. So I think from a Remgro perspective, I think the timing is a little bit surprising. Of course, that Grindrod Bank deal almost through, you would imagine that they would have waited for that a little bit, but there is some conflict of interest in some of the bids they have with Mask and so forth. So there are some reasons for them proceeding with the unbundling as quickly as they have. But on Grindrod, they also got some assets they can further sell from a private equity side of perspective. I think the underlying performance and the ports business is looking quite good. I think they are well positioned, and valuation is still not expensive. And this is a business which was a massive underperformer in the past, being far too complex, having too many assets that underperformed. They've cleaned up the portfolio, much more streamlined now, much more focused on cash flows as well as returns on fair shareholders. And as a result, we're seeing the impact of it.
Yeah.
I think a lot more SA companies need to follow this mandate, and we'll see much better results going forward.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right, well, getting to your stock picks this evening, gents. Kayaletso, what takes your fancy?
I suppose consistent with the theme of defensive stocks with AVI just now. My stock pick is British American Tobacco. Like the defensive nature of the business, especially going into a slowdown, and or possible recession, that tends to do quite well going through such negative periods. The rand hedge qualities are also quite attractive. Strong cash generation, attractive dividend yield at over 6 to 7%, basically. And the new generation products that they've launched over the past few years are starting to lose less. So the direction of travel is actually improving for those next generation products. And those are actually gaining momentum, and 2025 is a target for them to break even and actually start being profitable. So quite like the longer term story where they're actually able to disrupt their own portfolio in order to drive growth going forward.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Alex, how about you?
Yeah, my stock pick is CMH. So a few months ago when they had the annual results, it was one of my stock picks, and I said if CMH can grow earnings from this base, it will be a very good opportunity. So the day they brought out the interim statement, we saw a very strong update, and it seems like a very high probability that they are going to have a very strong full year. If you analyze this earnings number, it gives you roughly about a PE of just slightly below 5, or a dividend yield in the region of 14%.
Jeez.
For CMH. And usually H2 is also better for CMH than H1. So I think the valuation is still very compelling. Even as Africans are getting poorer and poorer and they're not saving, they are still buying a lot of cars. They can just look at the demands for the likes of Aval and so forth is going through the roof. So I think CMH have gained market share, which they're going to retain specifically in the car rental side of the business. I think they're going to have a cracker set of results, and it's still attractive from a valuation perspective in my view. And there's just so many opportunities in SA Inc. at the moment where you can pick up stocks at less than P of 7, dividend yield of X of 7. Here's a stock with a P of about 5, dividend yield of 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, a very high quality of earnings, no debt, quite a no-brainer for me.
Yeah. All right, gents, we shall leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. Nice to chat to you both. Alex Dace is from Umthombo Wealth, Kayaletho Nondada from Old Mutual Investments. And just a quick reminder before I go, tune in tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We bring you live coverage of the 15th Annual South African Innovation Summit, brought to you by the Department of Science and Innovation. The event brings together top entrepreneurs, innovators, corporates, policymakers, and thought leaders under one roof to support and inspire a sustained economic growth across Africa. So that's at 10 o'clock tomorrow on Business Day TV. Good night. We'll be right back.